the Milwaukee Journal sent a Milwaukee Bucks podcast. That's right, the Milwaukee Bucks. The season just ended. But here we are again chatting about your NBA franchise, the Eastern Conference's, Eastern Conference champion. That's not quite right. The Toronto Raptors, of course, won the NBA title after beating the Bucks in six games in the Eastern Conference Finals. But the Bucks have an exciting offseason ahead. Lots of decisions to be made on the free agency front. The draft is coming up on Thursday, and we have to break it all down for you. This is my name is J.R. Radcliffe. On the other line, Matt Velasquez, the Milwaukee Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Matt, did you enjoy your 1 week offseason?
You know, it was actually pretty nice. So I did, but it's definitely less than I'm used to.
Yes, there's so much going on, right? The Bucks are usually done by the end of the first round, which of course is like 3 or 4 months before the end of the season, where it ended this year. We will get to the draft, we will get to free agency, but we're going to start with a story that you published over the weekend on Father's Day, a Father's Day sort of exclusive about Chris Middleton, whose girlfriend had their child a little bit early, came prematurely by surprise during the playoffs, during the Detroit Pistons series. And Chris Middleton was flown sort of secretly on Mark Lazary's private airplane back to Milwaukee to be with his girlfriend, to be with his newborn child. She was in the hospital for a while, and then they were able to take her home. But the thing that's so striking about this story, I mean, obviously it's a great Father's Day story. It's a great moment for Chris Middleton, his first child. But nobody knew about this, and that's the crazy thing. Like, he was in a hospital where there are people coming in and out all day, but this story didn't leak out anywhere. It wasn't something that came to light in one of the later rounds of the playoffs. How did you hear about it? How did this story come about?
Well, for me, I knew something was going on, like, that night in Detroit. I didn't actually notice that he was off the bench with 4 minutes left necessarily at the time. I think I might have seen it, if I recall correctly, but I didn't know that it was anything major. I was, you know, they're up by 28. I was, you know, buried in my computer finishing up, you know, getting the story in for deadline. But I really knew something was amiss when I went to the locker room and Chris wasn't there. And he wasn't going to be talking at the podium. And he was already gone. And so that kind of signaled to me that, like, that was not normal. You know, usually a game like that, he'd be talking at the podium with Giannis, with Bledsoe. You know, and the fact that he wasn't going to be available at all to the media that night, was at first I was annoyed, but then I started kind of doing some poking around, and you know, it took some time to actually figure out what happened. That didn't happen probably until like the middle of the next series is that I kind of got an idea, but that was off the record. It was nothing that I could report, and you know, it kind of just came down to you know, to talking to Chris more about it, and you know, it's something that that didn't happen until after the season ended. And so once I was able to talk to him, like after the season had ended, then I got to talk to him about that. And he was, you know, more than willing to share his story with me. And I really appreciate being able to write that story because it was a really, you know, interesting and wild story and gives a good look into the fact that, you know, we talk about these guys as basketball players all the time, but they are real people with real problems too. And they have things going on that's definitely more than meets the eye. And I know he tried to keep it quiet, tried to keep it private. Didn't want to be a distraction at all during the playoffs. Just wanted to kind of do what he needed to do on the court. Do we need to do off the court? And then once the season ended, that's when he was more willing to talk about it.
Yeah. What an emotional time to be in the midst of the franchise's best season in however long. And his play is always under the microscope because he's a starter. He's a key contributor. And certainly there were times in the playoffs where he was magic. And that was knowing that this was going on in the background makes that all the more fascinating. The Brewers have a similar situation with Jimmy Nelson, who was working his way back from a prolonged injury absence, a year and a half away from the game. And at the same time, he had twin daughters that were born very at risk, had some health complications, and they were born prematurely. It's incredible that these athletes are able to perform at that level, given these things that are going on in the background. And Middleton is so central, as you wrote in your story, so central to what comes next, the free agency situation with him being an unrestricted free agent. It's kind of interesting to know what happens with him. He's kind of the first guy that you want to see. You want to know what happens with him next. Shout out, by the way, to the NICU people at Frater. My son was not born prematurely, but did spend a few days in the NICU after he was born, our firstborn. And great experience with the people who worked there. They took great care of us, and I know how awesome those people can be. So Let's talk a little more about Middleton's role here. It seems obvious to me that he will resign in Milwaukee, and I know that's probably overstating it, but there's interest on his side. There's interest on the Bucks side. We've talked about how he's probably going to get a max deal. He's going to get a max offer. He'll probably take it, I would think. I would think that he'll stay in Milwaukee where he can make the most possible money. Is that an overstatement? Do you think there is a better than, let's say, 20% chance that he investigate another opportunity and he sign elsewhere? How slam dunk do you think Middleton coming back really is at this point?
You know, it's one of those things where throughout the season he has said that he wants to be in Milwaukee, that they have unfinished business, that he's really grown a lot here in Milwaukee, that he really likes it. You know, the organization has said in numerous interviews, not just to me, but other places too, that they want to retain him, that he is a priority. They generally want to keep this whole team together. They want to take another shot at it. I know there's a, I think it was a story, from Frank Isola in the Athletic where Mark Lazary said, you know, hey, like, we know he's not going to give us a big hometown discount. You know, they know what his worth is. They know that he's valuable. They know that he is a player who complements Giannis well, who the two of them have been, you know, in the trenches together for a long time, and they have a good relationship together, and that they work together. And so, I think that all of those things put together, I think if the Bucks, I mean, the Bucks can offer him more than anyone else. They can offer him 5 years, $190 million. No other team can offer that. You know, and there can be a healthy and fair debate whether Middleton is worth that, which is fine. I mean, I think that's a very allowable debate, especially in the sports realm, because you can compare that to other players this summer who will also be eligible for that max to make that same amount of money. And you say, well, is Chris Middleton as valuable as player X who would also get that offer? And you say, oh, well, probably not. But for some players, maybe so. But the problem is that if the Bucks don't bring him back, they're still going to be, you know, in a tight cap situation. They won't have max money. They likely won't have max money to be able to offer to somebody just because of the way the cap holds work. Even if they renounce Chris, they renounce Mirotić, they probably have to renounce Brogdon too if they wanted to actually get to a full max slot. I don't know if they can bring back somebody better than Chris Middleton if they let him go. So, you know, letting him go would carry its own issues and uncertainties. Whereas if you gave him a max, I think with the cap going up, you know, he would still be on a, you know, tradable or movable contract. Not necessarily that you want to move him, but you would at least have him and you would be able to solidify that. And the other piece of the puzzle is, you know, everybody's going to be talking about Giannis's ability to sign a supermax next summer. You know, he still has 2 years left under contract, but if he's going to stay in Milwaukee long term, you want him to sign that supermax next summer, or at least say, hey, I'm going to sign back with the team. And you need to be able to show that, you know, as a team, we're going to bring back or we're going to put together the best possible team around you, because all he cares about is winning. So if he believes he can win in Milwaukee, the chances of him staying in Milwaukee are that much better. But if you let Chris go, but you don't bring back somebody who's better, then obviously that's going to be a problem down the road.
Yeah, so you're kind of touching on this, and I want to ask this without sounding stupid, but what exactly is the risk to re-signing him? Because you've talked about a couple factors here. First of all, the cap is still going up, so in a couple years this deal isn't going to look like an albatross by any means when it comes to managing the cap. He's a good enough player that you don't want to just throw him away for nothing, and that's essentially what's going to happen if they don't re-sign him. They're not going to get a player of equal value. That's just pretty much how it's going to be. And it doesn't seem like having him on the books for them, it doesn't seem like that's a huge roadblock. You could, you know, 3-4 years from now, theoretically, they could trade him. They could, I don't quite know if they could renounce him if it came down to that, but they could. It seems like there isn't a lot of risk. What would be the drawback to having him back on a max contract?
Well, I guess the drawback with the full max is that it is a percentage of the cap, so every year that his salary goes up. Whereas if you could get him for, you know, say, hey, Chris, we'll give you $30 million a year for the next 5 years, that's, you know, he'd be giving up like $40 million, right? Like he'd be making, you know, 5 years, $150 million, as opposed to 5 years, $190 million. You You could even do maybe a shorter deal than that, but obviously, why would he want to do a shorter deal? If you're a player, you say, "Oh, we'll give you a 3-year max." He'll be like, "Yeah, well, no thanks. I want to, actually be able to make the most money possible." Unless he's looking to get to like the 10 years of service, where then you can be eligible for even higher max. So maybe he'd be willing to take a shorter deal, but it would still be at max money, but it wouldn't be for as long a period of time, and it may be on betting on himself. To then be able to get another big raise somewhere near his prime. But I think if you're the Bucks, I mean, the risk is, I don't want to say minimal. I mean, because there's always a risk in giving someone a max contract, just because if that person gets hurt, if that person declines in production, then you are going to have a lot of your money tied up in someone who's not contributing, which there is a risk to that for sure. But I mean, outside of being able to get someone better than Chris Middleton, or be able to sign two players that, you know, maybe to less money that can replace what he does, he's still the best option. I mean, if they can go out and get somebody, like, I'm not sure who that person is. I mean, I don't think Kyrie Irving is walking through that door. I don't even know that he would be like the best fit among the guys they already have. People like to talk about Jimmy Butler, but you look at his numbers, you know, and yes, he is known as like a closer, and he's a guy who makes big shots or whatever. But taken as a whole, his numbers aren't necessarily like, you know, that much better than Chris Middleton's, especially, you know, when you look at the shooting and the 3-point shooting. You know, Chris Middleton's been better. You have to kind of take all those things and say, well, at the most, those guys are comparable. So why would you trade out a guy who has 7 years of experience playing with Giannis for a guy who has none? You know, and they're both kind of similar. So if they're similar, why wouldn't the weight shift towards the guy who's been around? So I would think that it would be hard. And a lot of people mentioned Klay Thompson. Well, we know what happened to Klay Thompson. Super unfortunate ACL tear in the NBA Finals, like when he was playing, like, you know, absolute, like, just fire. He was great. He was just so good. But you know, and the Warriors aren't going to let him go, and they're probably going to have to give him a max to keep him. And he won't be able to play for, you know, most, if not all of next season. So the number of guys who you could find to reasonably replace Chris Middleton, I just don't know how many there are out there. People have mentioned Bogdan Bogdanovic. I don't know if they've watched him play defense. Like, he's not,
I have,
I mean, he's not at the level of Chris Middleton as a defender. I mean, Middleton gets a lot of flack for maybe especially the Eastern Conference Finals, where his offense, you know, outside of that one game where he went off, where his offense wasn't up to where it had been. But he spent a lot of time guarding Kawhi Leonard. And then when you watch that series, like, yes, Kawhi got his. Like, he got some points, and plenty of them. But, you know, when you watch Middleton, I mean, I think a lot of people would agree that he did basically everything that a normal human can do. I mean, he did a pretty good job on Kawhi in most cases. You know, there were times where he got burnt and times where he got beat, but that's going to happen when you're guarding Kawhi. I mean, you expect whoever's guarding Giannis to have times where they get burnt and they get beat. But I think that he made things tough. He had a hand in the face. He was trying to deny, you know, and if Kawhi's making contested mid-range jumpers in your face, I mean, that's just life. Like, you just kind of deal with that. So I think that, you know, what Middleton brings on defense and the versatility and the ability to stack up size wise against, you know, guys 2 through 4, on an opposing team. I think that, you know, you can't do that with Bogdanovic. They're just going to put him in pick and roll after pick and roll and force him to deal with stuff. And so, you know, that half of the court, the half of the game matters a lot to the Bucks. Yeah, that's the number one thing they talked about all season. So they're not gonna, you know, take a defensive downgrade if they're moving on from Chris Middleton. So just in terms of the market, I don't know who else is out there. I mean, unless Kawhi Leonard wants to leave the Raptors and come over to Milwaukee, I just don't see a ton of options out there that are better than Chris Middleton. So, you know, as it is in the NBA, sometimes you just got to pay. I mean, it might be an overpay, but they've been underpaying Chris Middleton for years. I mean, the fact that he's had this contract, you know, 5 years, $70 million, which, you know, he's going to decline the player option. So it's like 4 years, $57 million. You know, he's definitely outperformed that. And so he's earned himself the opportunity to get overpaid a little bit.
I'm going to focus on this Kawhi example that you just gave as an illustration of how this works a little bit. So this is a little bit of a detour. I do want to talk more about like Malcolm Brogdon and actually go back to Klay Thompson and discuss how the injuries to Durant and Thompson might impact the free agent market if there's a trickle-down effect to the Bucks. But as a means of explaining, we've explained a little bit how bird rights and the mid-level exception and the other exceptions work. You can read more about that at jsonline.com. If you're still confused, there's a great frequently asked questions out there about the salary cap. It's pretty complicated, but it does break it down pretty nicely for you. At its most basic, bird rights means if a guy's on with a team for 3 years on a contract or multiple contracts for 3 years with a team, that team has the capability to sign that guy without accounting against the cap. They can give him more money because they are not as restricted by the salary cap as an external team would be. Another team would have to work with the restrictions of a salary cap. And you can explain a little bit of that or a lot or whatever you want to do. But let's say Kawhi Leonard did wake up and want to become a Milwaukee Buck, you know, probably the best free agent out there at this point with Durant injured. I still feel like there's just too many things in the way from making that logistically happen, because to get him under the cap, they'd have to renounce some of these guys that they would have these bird rights with or other opportunities to sign. They would have to lose those opportunities to get Kawhi Leonard onto their roster. So it wouldn't be just Kawhi for Chris Middleton. It'd be Kawhi for Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, Malcolm Brogdon, and Nico Mirotic. I don't know if you could sign any of those guys. If somebody like Kawhi decided, I want to be a Milwaukee Buck, give me max money, I'll do it. Can you kind of describe that? Like, if Kawhi wanted to be a Buck, what are the biggest roadblocks from making that happen at all?
Oh, this is great. Thanks. You just teed it up. I'm ready. I'm excited. Okay, so right now, the Bucks have, by my calculations, a little bit over $74 million allocated in salary for next season. That is split among six players, Giannis, Bledsoe, Snell, Ersan, DJ, and Dante, who are on guaranteed contracts. Then you can add in Pat Connaughton and Sterling Brown. They account for about $3.3 million on non-guaranteed deals, though I'm pretty sure those deals will be guaranteed as of the new league year or shortly thereafter. Then you have to count in the million dollars owed to George Hill, who they will waive, but he's still owed $1 million next year. And they could stretch that, so they could take that $1 million and pay it out to George Hill over 3 years. So that would go down to $333,000. But for right now, it's $1 million because they haven't stretched it yet. Then you have to add in Spencer Hawes and Larry Sanders, who are dead cap. That is money owed to those two guys for contracts that were stretched. And so that totals out to 3.8. So that brings us to the $74.1 million. That's right now about 34.8 below the cap. So yes, they are below the cap in that regard. But however, you have to take into account that each player that was on their roster last year carries a cap hold. And so that means that they would have to renounce cap holds in order to actually clear out the space. You know, and you look at Nikola Mirotic's cap hold is $18.75 million. Middleton's, it'll be the case once he declines the $13 million option, his will be $19.5 million. Brook Lopez is $4 million. You have to kind of keep open the spot for their first round pick, which if they use the 30th pick, that cap hold is $1.9 million. That's what that player's contract would be. Malcolm Brogdon's cap hold is $3 million. Tim Frazier's is $1.6 million. Pau Gasol's is $1.6 million. So they have $50 million in cap holds, bringing their total cap figure to $124.6 million. That's like $15 million over the cap. So in order to clear out space, you know, they're going to need to renounce guys. So even if they renounced, they'd have to renounce Nikola Mirotic, Brook Lopez, not take their 30th pick, like trade out of their 30th pick and not make any picks. Get rid of Malcolm Brogdon, get rid of Chris Middleton, get rid of Tim Frazier, get rid of Pau Gasol. That would give them enough space, you know, to be able to sign a guy to a max contract. But then they'd still only have nine players, and they'd only be able to fill out, and because they used their cap space to sign a free agent, I don't know if they would actually still have access to the mid-level exception. You know, I'd have to check that out, but still, they'd have to fill six more roster spots at best with the mid-level exception, and then 5 minimum contracts. So, and that'd be with no pick, no Middleton, no Brogdon, no Mirotić, no Lopez, all that stuff. So they're in a pretty tight situation. So they have theoretical cap space, but it would be at the detriment of losing a whole bunch of guys. And maybe you could keep Brogdon. Maybe it'd be enough to be able to get a guy at a max, and you would just squeak under with Brogdon with that cap hold, and then be able to bring him back on his bird rights. But they are super duper tight. I mean, the best way to clear out space for them would be to trade somebody. They're not going to trade Giannis. That'd be the way to clear out the most space, but what's the point of that? I have no expectation they'd be trying to trade Eric Bledsoe. They just signed him to a 4-year deal. You know, he was a first-team all-defense guy. He wasn't at his best during the playoffs, but I think they still believe in him. So I don't think that he would necessarily be the guy that they would move. Tony Snell could be a candidate for someone they'd want to trade. He didn't play really much at all in the playoffs. Part of that is due to him spraining his ankle late in the season. Part of that is due to other guys playing well. And so, you know, he's on the books for about $23 million over the next 2 years. The question is, what would they have to give up to move him? Or what would they have to absorb from other team in order to move him? You know, that's a big question. I think Ersan Ilyasova, you know, he's somebody who legitimately could be moved. You know, he is in the second year of a 3-year, $21 million contract. But the third year is a team option. So if an opposing team wanted to trade for him, they'd only be on the hook for $7 million this year. And they could decide if they wanted to have him next year, which, you know, that's a pretty friendly contract and movable contract. The problem is that, you know, the Bucks really like Ersan, and Bud in particular had a lot of faith in him, a lot of trust in him, and really leaned on him a lot, you know, during the playoffs, especially when Nikola Mirotić was struggling. And so they see Ersan as a guy who fits what they do. But if they wanted to open up some space, that could be, he could be someone who could potentially give them some wiggle room if they were willing to move him, because his contract still has value. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of time to look at this. We'll probably look at this even more, maybe in a future podcast heading into free agency, or maybe, you know, after free agency has started, as dominoes start to fall. But the Bucks right now really only have theoretical max cap space, but it would be really difficult for them to put together a team, you know, with, even if they did clear out and try and make some room to bring in a max level player.
Maybe there are people who do want Giannis, Kawhi, and a bunch of guys you've never heard of, but that does sound pretty catastrophic, the things they'd have to do to their roster.
I mean, that'd be super fun. I mean, this is one of those times where you want to, like, be able to see all the parallel universes and just be able to, like, play it out and see what that would look like, because, like, Giannis, Kawhi, like, Bledsoe, Ersan, Snell, Dante, DJ, like, I don't know what that team would be, but I would be entertained, I think. I mean, when you bring a fun guy into the locker room, like, how could that hurt?
He is a fun guy. He's a fun guy with a couple championship rings, couple finals MVPs. That can't hurt. So let's get back to reality for a second and go back to some of these other. I don't want to go too deep into the weeds on all the different free agent decisions, because we have talked about them before. I feel like Malcolm Brogdon is the most complicated. I think the most straightforward in basic terms is a restricted free agent. The team will either match what somebody else offers, or they will sign him, and or they will say, okay, other team, you can have him. But I feel like he's the wild card. I'm not sure the Bucks are definitely going to match. Obviously, that hinges a little bit on what they're going to do with these other guys, with Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, Nico Mirotić. Do you get the sense still that Malcolm Brogdon is, if you had to handicap this, is the most likely to end up somewhere else? Or do you think the Bucks are just going to view him as indispensable, that they will do whatever it takes to bring him back next year?
Well, I think if I had to handicap it, I think I would say among the three, among Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, and Malcolm Brogdon, that maybe Lopez is the most likely to go somewhere else, only because the Bucks have no control over his situation. Whereas at least with Brogdon, right? If Lopez goes somewhere else, theoretically, then they could say, all right, well, we definitely have to keep Brogdon. And so they keep him. If they can keep Lopez on a contract that is friendly to them, you know, or at least can fit into their mid-level exception or can fit into their cap space if they renounce someone like Mirotić. Then you say, okay, well, Brogdon can stay. Like, you know, we got Lopez on what we want, and now we can, you know, put Brogdon into the slot. But his market's going to be fascinating, because I think I've said this before on the podcast or I've said other places. This could be his one shot at a big payday. I mean, he's been on a rookie second-round pick deal. You know, he's made about $3.8 million over the first 3 years of his career, which among regular people is a lot of money, and among NBA players is not very much. And so he's in a spot where he can now actually, you know, hit the market and see what his value is. And if it were me, I would definitely want to see what the market would bear and what teams would, what kind of interest they would have in me, especially coming off a 50-40-90 season, something that, you know, very few players, very few non-Hall of Famers have ever done. You know, this could be his shot to make, you know, a rather sizable contract. And there have been times where guys have, you know, gone into restricted free agency and gotten big deals because they, you know, a team sent to an offer sheet and forced their original team to match. I mean, that's happened in Washington, where Otto Porter got signed an offer sheet. I think it was with Brooklyn. And it forced the Wizards to match because they had no other options. They couldn't bring in anybody else. They didn't match. And so they had to max Otto Porter. Okay, like, I think it was Tyler Johnson down in Miami again with the Nets. The Nets were just like forcing everybody's hands. And they signed him to like a $50 million deal. And the Nets and the Heat were like, well, I guess we got to bring him back. And so there could be teams that are interested in Malcolm Brogdon. I know there have been like rumors all the time about like the Dallas Mavericks and all the machinations they're making and trying to bring teams in. You look at the you know, the Lakers now with Anthony Davis and maybe a little cap room to play with. If they don't bring in a max level player, you know, could they bring in a combination of Brogdon and somebody else, and that could fill up their space, and they can kind of force things. You know, there are teams out there that I'm sure would value what Malcolm brings. On the flip side, you know, there could be situations where, you know, other teams go for, you know, different free agents. They get their max guys. Teams with cap space are they either want to keep the cap space, or they're not looking to necessarily commit a lot of it to Malcolm Brogdon long term, and they're worried about his injury history, and you know, maybe he's not offered as much as you think he might be, and so that's the risk that he's taking, is, you know, if he decides to play it out and go into restricted free agency and solicit offers from other teams, then you run into a situation where maybe those offers don't come. That's happened before too. You know, he could, you know, decide, hey, I don't want to initially hit the market. My agent has done enough looking to figure out what the market would be, and you know, the Bucks are offering me, you know, this amount, and I want to sign quickly and get it over with. You know, Tony Snell was a restricted free agent with the Bucks a couple years ago, and he signed like at you know 11:01 and 1 second, like, you know, on the night of the beginning of free agency, at least Central Time. And now it'll start at 5 o'clock Central Time on June 30th, which is great because now I don't need to stay up until, you know, godforsaken amounts, you know, a time late into the night, and hopefully can be able to figure some stuff out during daylight hours, which is great. So Malcolm Brogdon, I think that the Bucks, you know, are in a situation where if they're willing to pay the luxury tax, which they've indicated that they could be, I don't think that, you know, they're going to let Malcolm Brogdon go unless it is just some kind of absurd, like some team wants to max him or something, which I don't necessarily foresee. But I think if, you know, if he's in the, you know, $15 to $20 million range, I think they can probably, you know, be able to stomach that.
Here's a little bit of a curveball. I want to talk a little bit about Dante DiVincenzo and DJ Wilson, because I think those two guys are a little bit, you come out of the 2018 season feeling like those two guys are a little bit of an enigma. Dante was hurt most of the year. We didn't really get to see what he could do for this team, even though early in the season he looked really good. And DJ Wilson at times, this was a breakout season for him, but then down the stretch, once they acquired Nikola Mirotić, we saw Ersan get playing time before DJ. We didn't see DJ a lot in the playoffs. We didn't see him a lot down the stretch. But I gotta wonder what the Bucks see with these two guys and how that informs what they do next. It could inform what type of player they draft. It could inform what decisions they make in free agency, because if they feel like these two guys are going to be big-time contributors next year, and I think there's some evidence to suggest at least DJ Wilson could be that next year, that it could alter their plans in some way. How much do you think the Bucks are factoring those two guys? And maybe the answer is not. Maybe they are not going to impact what comes next. But I do feel like DJ Wilson and Dante DiVincenzo are a little bit of an unknown for the 2019-2020 Bucks. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're definitely unknowns to an extent. Especially Dante. He played so little. There are flashes that he could be, part of the rotation and a positive presence. But if you're looking for him to replace George Hill, he's not ready for that yet. George Hill has, that kind of veteran presence in the league, that steadying presence. He can do a lot with the ball in his hands. He's a really good defender. That's stuff that Dante's going to have to grow into. Not saying that he can't. I'm just saying that it'll take some time. DJ Wilson definitely saw more from him last season. I think he's somebody that, if Nikola Mirotic does not come back, which the Bucks have his bird rights, we'll see. He said he felt he hit the lottery coming to the Bucks, and he loved Milwaukee, all that stuff. We'll see, what he's willing to do or willing to take in free agency if he wanted to come back. That could be an interesting subplot if the Bucks don't renounce him, or even if they do. I mean, you can renounce a guy and still bring him back, but you have to shut the cap space to do it. I feel like he's the most likely to be a casualty of free agency and go somewhere else. So if he does leave, can DJ Wilson, slide up in the rotation? He doesn't do the same stuff that Mirotić does. He's not going to be shooting 30 footers. But he, is I would say better defender than Nikola Mirotić, though there's a smaller sample size for him. He can make open 3-pointers. He can drive, he can rebound. There's a lot of things he does well. And so the question is, can he do that consistently over the course of a full season? And be able to help the Bucks, off the bench, because that's likely where he'd be coming. So I think he probably factors more into all of this than maybe DiVincenzo does. Though if you have a full season of DiVincenzo, or even just more than you had him last year with that bilateral heel bursitis, I think he can still help. But I would project Wilson as more of a contributor than DiVincenzo.
As far as Mirotić, as far as the subplot, I agree with you. I think that's going to be really fascinating. I've ruled him out, sort of, because I think it's natural to focus on the other three guys. But if Niko Mirotić comes back, that could be an area where they improve without adding anybody new. I mean, a full season of him could be really interesting, a fascinating element, especially if he plays a little bit better than he did when he was with the Bucks. I know he was injured a little bit, but if he's at full strength, that's a heck of a weapon to have. So really interested to know what happens with Mirotić here. So I'm going to use the chatter about DiVincenzo to transition a little bit into the draft. You had a great story at jsonline.com talking about the options the Bucks have with that 30th pick, and I don't mean player options, just they could use it as a sweetener for a deal to try and move somebody off of their books, like Tony Snell, like you talked about before. Not likely that happens, because the 30th pick just isn't that interesting. It's the last pick of the first round. Obviously, they could make a trade. They could just straight up, they could do something. They could have some deal in the works. Maybe it's not a big sweetener. Maybe it's just a straight up deal. But it doesn't seem like the Bucks really are going to need this 30th pick. If they keep it, if they decide that they're going to draft a player, I'm kind of curious what their needs would be. I mean, it's easy to say they would take the best player available, but you could see them getting a backup big man or maybe a backup shooting guard. Seems like that's an area where they could be needy. Obviously, some of this hinges on who stays and who goes. But what do you think the Bucks are even looking at with the 30th pick at this point?
Yeah, I think they'd be looking for someone who could contribute right away. I think that's what you want is you don't want to. They're not building necessarily for the future right now. They're building for someone who can come in and really help them. And, be able to provide something off the bench. And so, I think in that situation, we've seen guys from other teams flourish. I mean, look at like Kevon Looney, Milwaukee's own. He was a guy who was picked with the 30th pick in the 2015 draft. And when you join a team like the Warriors, a team that, is a perennial a championship contender, a team that would be picking in the 30th spot. You know, by nature of it being the 30th spot, usually it's the team that had the best record in the league the year before, unless there was a trade that moved that pick. But when you're joining a team that's already good, like, you can come in and maybe you take 1 year to develop, maybe you take, you know, part of a year to develop, but then, you know, you actually have a chance to, by virtue of working with some of the best players in the league, one of the best teams in the league, that you're going to kind of have that trial by fire. And you're going to be able to learn quickly, and if you can, then you can actually, you know, make an impact. If you can't learn quickly, then, you know, you're going to get buried, and it's going to be, you know, tough sledding for you. But, you know, there's a path. You know, we saw Kevon Looney. I mean, Josh Hart was a 30th overall pick. You know, he went to the Lakers, obviously a different situation than the Warriors, and obviously it just now got traded. But he proved himself as a capable NBA player fairly quickly. And so you can get guys there who are quality players. You know, I just wonder if there's going to be an avenue for the Bucks to potentially trade down and maybe get two second round picks. Maybe find a team, you know, like Sacramento, like Philadelphia, that maybe wants to move up to get the specific guy they want at 30, and is willing to trade a couple second rounders in order to do that, and the Bucks can get, you know, two shots at it. So you can bring in two guys in the second round and roll the dice that way and say, you know what, like, we can spend less money paying these two guys that we, you know, maybe on their boards are rated more highly or more valuable in that second round, instead of taking the one guy who would make that slotted $1.93 million. And so, you know, I think there's definitely the potential for value there. There's also bust potential. I mean, that's always how the draft is. It's always a crapshoot. It's always, you know, taking risks. Out of every draft, there's only, you know, a handful of guys that end up being, you know, long-time, high-level contributors. You're not going to get great players all the time. I mean, Bucks fans, I feel like, know this pretty well based on Milwaukee's own draft history. Like, you're not going to be, you know, every draft isn't going to be the draft where you get Giannis or that you get Malcolm Brogdon as the future rookie of the year. Sometimes you're going to get Rashad Vaughn. Sometimes you're going to get, you know, with Joe Alexander.
You said Joe Alexander. I knew you were going to say it. I mean,
yeah, sometimes those things happen, and it happens to pretty much every team. Like, some drafts are great. Some drafts you think are great, and they're not. Some drafts you think aren't great, and they're great. So, you know, I think that the more spins of the roulette wheel that you get, you know, it might be a little bit better. You know, and so every team has to go in there with their own plan and figure out what they can do. But the Bucks definitely have some interesting options here with that 30th pick.
Yeah, one of the subplots I'll be paying attention to is where some local products will wind up. Tyler Harrow of Kentucky had a really good freshman season and has been invited to the draft, so it seems like he's on track to be taken in the first round. Jordan Poole of Milwaukee from Michigan, probably not quite as highly regarded at this point, but still somebody who could get taken in the late first round. I think, I mean, like you said, if you're looking for an experienced guy, there's going to be plenty of them available in the late first round. We've never had this many freshmen declare, so there's going to be a lot of young talent at the top of the board, and the Bucks will certainly get an opportunity to take a veteran guy like a Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, those guys are going to be out there, and if they can get out of the first round, not to go too deep in the weeds, but the first round, they would be obligated to pay quite a bit more money than they would if it were a second round guy. So you could see why they would want to dip down into that round to try to find some of those experienced guys. Going back then quickly to the free agency thing, if they do decide to re-sign their own guys and not chase after one of the top flight free agents, are there free agents out there that you see that could theoretically really help this Bucks team that they could also work into the cap situation? You know, I'll just throw some names out of guys that are sort of in that mid-level free agent sort of tier, the third tier, lower second, early third tier. Guys like Harrison Barnes, Danny Green, Terry Rozier, Paul Millsap. I don't know if those guys are necessarily fits, but those are the types of names that I would guess the Bucks could theoretically pursue. Is there anybody out there that jumps out to you that, man, if that guy were on the Bucks, they would really, really address something that they were missing, if they were really missing anything last year?
Well, it all depends. You're saying if the Bucks do re-sign their guys and are looking to fill out the roster?
Yeah, or let's say Nikola Mirotic doesn't come back. So we've got they re-signed the three guys that I think most people hope and expect that they're going to bring back in Middleton, Lopez, and Brogdon. Would there be a guy out there that they would go after at that point?
I mean, they'd have to be doing work on the fringes at that point. Just because if they sign Lopez and Middleton and Brogdon, like, you're already going to be like tapped out. Like they're only gonna have minimum contracts. So that's when you hope as an organization that your culture, that your previous success, that your kind of established like starting lineup and your established scheme and coach and all that stuff. That's when you hope those things will really pay off, because that's when you start to get those ring chaser type guys where you can get somebody on a minimum contract who, maybe wouldn't have signed a minimum somewhere else, but they really just want to come and join to be part of what you're doing. And so I don't know the guys that you mentioned. I don't know if any of those guys fit necessarily that mold. I mean, maybe, gosh, I'm just like picking random names out here. But maybe you could get like a Jeff Green, who not a sexy name, but he is a guy who can play the four or the five, who can shoot the three, who has been on really good teams before. So maybe that's somebody you can get who'd be willing to come in on a smaller deal. Or maybe probably not after the playoffs that he just had, but like Rodney Hood is somebody who like he just had a pretty baller playoffs with the Trailblazers. I don't think he'd be able to come in at that type of lower deal. But you get the general idea that I'm going for is that you're looking for guys who maybe are willing to give up some money and maybe can provide some value coming in to be because they want to be part of what the Bucks are building. Maybe this is just a personal hope because I'm a millennial and this is how I feel. But like, could Vince Carter play the Pau Gasol, Jason Terry, super duper veteran, but also still get out there and give you some minutes type of role? Like, that'd be kind of fun. I think that he would, he has a pretty good reputation. I don't know what is the situation with Frank Kaminsky's career?
Ooh.
He's hitting restricted free agency. I don't know that the Hornets are necessarily going to, be interested in an offer sheet or worry about him. If they do renounce him in order to clear up cap space, maybe for Kemba, or whatever they need to do, and they're not going to be competing to keep him, could he be someone who works for the Bucks? I mean, he's I'm not going to say he's the same as Nikola Mirotic, but like maybe he could fit into that roster spot as someone who has size and some shooting ability and some versatility. So maybe he could be somebody. I don't know that he would be the best choice. I don't know out of all the pool of guys, but he is somebody who you might be able to get on a value contract. Because we have to think about like Pat Connaughton last year, right? Pat Connaughton is somebody they got for a value contract. He was filling into their mid-level exception space, slightly above the minimum, non-guaranteed second year. That's all team-friendly type stuff. So can they find someone like that who can be able to jump in and provide help to the roster at a lower cost? So that's kind of just some guys. I mean, Wayne Ellington, he's probably going to command more money than that, but he's somebody who, as a 3-point shooter and a guy off the bench, has proven that he can be an asset to a team. I think those are things that the Bucks would value, or at least he has a skill set that they could value. So that's kind of I could keep scrolling through lists of free agents and pulling out guys, but that's really what it's going to be about. If they bring back Middleton, if they bring back Brogdon, if they bring back Lopez, you're going to be looking for guys kind of on the fringe of possible talent for the money. Guys who are trying to either prove something, like maybe like a Brook Lopez type situation where he was trying to get to a winning team and be able to get out of the muck and mire of the Nets that he was with and the Lakers and kind of change the trajectory of his career a little bit. You can get somebody like that, but you can also get the ring chasers. You can get the guys who, you know, just are willing to give up a little bit of money to get some stability and some success.
You know, I alluded to this earlier, the changes to the free agency market, and if they impact the Bucks with Durant sustaining the Achilles injury and Klay Thompson tearing his ACL. I don't think there's a huge impact, because it does seem to me like the Bucks are going to be focused on their guys first and foremost, and there isn't really going to be a big-time surprise plan B, but it does seem to me that it would lessen the likelihood that you get one of these super teams in the East. I mean, certainly the New York Knicks come to mind as a team that was maybe going to sign Durant, and then who knows, maybe bring in Kyrie Irving. The Brooklyn Nets are another one. And as a Bucks fan, we still haven't seen the Bucks go to the conference NBA Finals in, you know, however many years. So I still see that as kind of the goal, and then see what happens. Like with Toronto this year, maybe the Western Conference finalist has a bunch of injuries. You never know what's going to happen. So I still feel like if all the power is out of the East, that's okay with me as a Bucks fan. If they do bring back their guys, they should still be the heavy favorite to get then to the NBA Finals. How else might there be any impact, knowing that Durant and Klay Thompson are kind of now sort of off the board in a way? Do you still think that there could be a super team in one of these New York locations, or that there's another team in the East that we should really be mindful of? Obviously, the Raptors, if Kawhi comes back. What? How do you see the whole overall picture at this point when it comes to the Eastern Conference?
I think as of right now, with the way everything's shaken out, I think still the biggest contenders in the East are the teams that were there last year. I don't see very many ways for, you know, like the Indiana Pacers and below, for those teams in the standings to get like extraordinarily better. I don't know like what free agents are going to any of those teams. I mean, yes, the Nets could get Kyrie. You know, they could make some moves. They have enough cap space to do some really interesting stuff. But I don't know exactly how that will materialize, if it will, especially with KD now. Like, I mean, he could sign with the Knicks or the Nets. He could do that. He's Kevin freaking Durant. Like, even with no Achilles, like, he could probably get a max contract because of just the potential of what he could be. And, you know, obviously that could then turn that contract into an albatross for whatever team signs it. But, you know, he might just opt into his $31.5 million with the Warriors for next year and do his rehab there. I mean, I have no idea what the best option is or how things will go with him. But I just don't see so much free agent talent out there that, you know, those other teams are going to rise up. The teams that the Bucks need to worry about, you know, are the Raptors. If the Raptors can stay together and keep Kawhi and all of that, like, they remain the team to beat in the East. That's just how it's going to be. Then you look at Philly, and they have their big decisions to make. They obviously still have Embiid and Simmons. Then you have the questions about Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris and what they need to do. Like, how much can they offer those guys? How much they're willing to pay? Can they even keep both of them? Like, that's going to be a really interesting situation. So if they can, you know, the more they can keep that nucleus together, I mean, that team, you know, they legitimately, or at least could believe, they could have legitimately gone to the finals. I mean, they came like one crazy Kawhi bounce from going to overtime. If they had won that game in overtime, they'd be facing the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, and who knows how that could have gone. You know, either both the Bucks and the Sixers have to be feeling like they could be the champions right now. And so they're probably going to do whatever it takes to keep their team together, to build their teams in order to be in a better position, you know, at this time next year. And then the Celtics, I mean, they got hurt. I think they got hurt a lot in terms of not being able to make anything happen with the Anthony Davis situation. Because now if Kyrie Irving leaves, you know, I don't know exactly how they can replace him there. I mean, they don't really have too many options in terms of their cap space. I mean, they have a bunch of picks, but, you know, can they turn those picks into something? Like, that's going to be a question. And so I don't know what it'll look like for the Celtics to get better this summer. Like, they have had success even when Kyrie hasn't played, but can they sustain that over the course of a full season? Especially now that the Bucks have you know, reloaded from where they were a couple of years ago. The Raptors, the Sixers, I mean, the Celtics, if they can't pull it together, maybe their window isn't open anymore. So I think all this is going to be, you know, super interesting. But the best thing that the Bucks can do, I mean, or one of the, at least that I can conceive of, is if they can run it back. I mean, they've proven this team can compete. They they were up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you know they went to double overtime in Game 3. If they were able to pull out that game, you know, I would expect that they'd be able to finish off that series at some point and go to the finals. You know, if they can be able to put their if they can put their team back together, improve and be able to figure out how to advance beyond the spot that they were this season, you know, they could be a legitimate finals contender.
I know a lot of people are disappointed because the Raptors did win the overall title, and it seems like the Bucks could have done the same thing. I'm actually encouraged by that because the Raptors were playing at such a high level. It's understandable more so to me now that you look at it with retro, you know, with hindsight, that the Bucks lost 4 games in a row. The Raptors were playing extremely well. Fred VanVleet, you know, caught a magic carpet ride, and Kawhi was incredible, and Pascal Siakam is great. So it sort of makes sense. I'll leave you with this question. I know the answer, I think, but John Horst has sort of made a little bit of a brand here of surprising us a little bit. Certainly that was the case when he traded for Mirotić and found a way to sort of transform Thon Maker into that. And he has made some pretty cool roster machinations as the Brook Lopez signing looks like a stroke of genius 1 year later. Is there a chance he surprises the hell out of all of us and does something we just don't see coming? Or is there like a 2% chance of that? Because it looks pretty remote. It looks pretty vanilla here. They got to re-sign their own guys. Is there a chance there's a surprise waiting for us, or is that just not something we should even have hope for?
Oh, there's always a chance. And I feel like, I mean, that surprise could come in the form of the Bucks signing a free agent to a value deal that you wouldn't expect. Like getting someone to take less money to join the team. Like that could be the surprise, right? You know, the surprise could be, you know, trading somebody that we didn't think he was going to trade. It could be getting more for the 30th pick than we thought he could. You know, there are a bunch of things he could do. I think the Bucks made the very understandable move to extend him this summer. He was heading into the last year of his original contract. And, you know, I think Masai Ujiri will probably win it in terms of executive of the year. But John Horst has put himself very much into that conversation with the moves that he made with the Bucks, you know, and I think deservedly so. And so, you know, the move from ownership to extend him, you know, is a vote of confidence. It also is a signal to free agents saying, hey, this is the guy. This is the guy who is going to be running our team, who's going to be making the front office decisions. You know, there is stability in our front office. We're not some team like there are others out there that has, you know, craziness in their front office and drama and changes. Now this is the guy. And so you can, you know, just kind of point to that and say the Bucks are a team that has stability, that has a foundation, that knows who they are, knows who they want to be. So I think that's really important. The Bucks are at least projecting that to free agents, and also that, you know, John Horst has a relationship with all the players that they're going to be negotiating with in-house. You know, it's not like he's going to be some, you know, unseen, unfamiliar face, you know, to Chris Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon, Brooke Lopez, or their agents. And so I think that'll be positive. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to what can John Horst actually do this summer? I feel like every summer is the most critical summer that John Horst has faced. We saw that last year with, you know, he finally had his first full year, first full summer as the GM. It was, all right, what's he going to do? Because he has to create a team that's better than the year before. And so he got Mike Budenholzer. He got Brook Lopez. He got Ersan Ilyasova. He built the team the way he wanted to build it. And we have this as a result. Now he has to figure out how to either keep this team together or, you know, go outside the team and to improve it in order to create the best possible team again that can get to, you know, at least the Eastern Conference Finals and have a chance to go to the finals. And, you know, all of that is with the backdrop of Giannis's potential to sign a Supermax next summer. So like every move, like every summer continues to be super critical for the Bucks, for John Horst. And, you know, we'll have to see what he's able to pull off this year.
He is Matt Velasquez. Great stuff on this supersized podcast, getting you set for the draft and free agency. It's going to be a crazy few weeks for the Milwaukee Bucks. Velasquez, you can read everything he has to write at jsonline.com. He's been covering the Milwaukee Bucks for the past couple years, doing great work. Matt, we'll probably have to touch base here the next couple weeks. Maybe an emergency podcast is in our future if the Bucks make one of these surprise moves, or maybe we just wrap up free agency or the draft or something like that. But I know we'll be chatting again very soon. Thanks for joining me, man.
All right, can't wait till the next one.
You can listen to this podcast at Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, please. Let us know what you think. You can find Matt Velasquez on Twitter. Find me, J.R. Radcliffe. I'm also on Twitter at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. We appreciate you tuning in this week. We will chat with you again very soon. Take care.